Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the 9th day of April, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And other than the continuing sagas of wars, rumors of wars, economic meltdowns, and of course, an invasion from the south, the major new news on this Tuesday is a string of firings, starting over the weekend with Kirsten Nelson at DHS. Perhaps because of that continuing invasion, or maybe it's headlines like this one from the American Mirror that says the crisis at the U.S.-Mexican border has gotten so bad, smugglers are bragging to the media about how much money they're making and how easy it is to get illegal aliens in. That according to The Guardian and a client for human smugglers in Guatemala. But in any case, she's gone, and just one day after the DHS secretary was forced out, President Trump directed Mick Mulvaney to fire the Secret Service director, too, Randolph or Tex Allais. And I can't say I blame the guy too much, given that arguably he shouldn't really trust the Secret Service to keep him alive. The headline from the Daily Mail in the UK puts it this way, Secret Service agents say good riddance to Director Allais, who proposed saving money by withdrawing protection of Trump's family and was more interested in getting chummy with agents rather than fixing serious problems. His departure, the story continues, was not unexpected and, in fact, was welcomed by most members of the law enforcement agency. The problem was his appointment was pushed by General John F. Kelly, then Secretary of Homeland Security, who evidently threatened to quit if Trump didn't appoint his good buddy Tex. Well, now that all of those folks are gone, the good news is it looks like there may be a lot more joining them real soon now. We'll look forward to that. The Deep State Swamp is, after all, a target-rich environment, even when it comes to mere firings. And the rest of the story really seems to outline the rest of the problem. According to Steve Bannon, it says Trump had another nominee in mind. George Milligan, sharp veteran agent and chief operating officer of the Secret Service. But Kelly wanted Allais in the worst way, said Bannon. And when Trump interviewed the man, he simply wasn't impressed, because Allais actually volunteered that he knew next to nothing about the Secret Service. Always a great way to impress a potential employer, don't you think? Author Ronald Kessler, who wrote a book about that aspect of the agency called The First Family Detail, concerning the Trump White House, said, apparently it was too much trouble to read books and articles about the agency or to check out the Secret Service website before meeting with the president, while rank-and-file agents evidently weren't too impressed with the guy and largely ignored him. He retained the scandal-ridden senior management, did nothing to change the agency's culture, and at one point actually proposed saving money by withdrawing Secret Service protection from some Trump family members and aides, unless they'd actually received a threat. But throughout history, the reports note, none of the assassinations or even assassination attempts have been preceded by a threat. Well, I guess that means not counting high-profile media talking heads and comedians. Even the Daily Mail summarizes it this way. Given the hate directed at Trump and his family, the idea of the director of the Secret Service entertaining the dropping of protection on presidential family members in itself ought to be a scandal, and all anyone needs to know about why the guy should be replaced before a tragedy occurs. The biggest question your host asks is, why the heck did it take so long? But maybe we know the answer. Something to do with a witch hunt, and now the air's been cleared a bit. And so, it seems, are some of the rats. Speaking of rats, there's a lot more news on that front today. Not necessarily the news people have been waiting for oh so long, but at least things may be headed in the right direction. Devin Nunez, says a piece from the Washington Examiner, is locked and loaded with 8 criminal referrals ready, including 3 targeting what are called conspiracy and global links thereto. He announced on Sunday he's ready to send these to the Just Us Department relating to the origins of the Russia bogus witch hunt, a.k.a. investigation, saying to Fox News, we're prepared this week to notify the Attorney General that we are prepared to send those referrals over and brief him, if he'd like that, with potentially a lot more on the way. Nunez say the stories didn't disclose any names. We can probably guess at least a few of them, at least if there is ever going to be justice. But he did break down 3 major categories in which the rats would fall. 5 of them, he said, are what I would call straight-up referrals. So just referrals that name someone and name the specific crimes. Those crimes included are lying to Congress. Well, there's an amazing one, right? Misleading Congress and leaking classified information. The other 3, he said, are more complicated, related to charges of conspiracy to lie to the Star Chamber Court, a.k.a. the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. And we knew there was a whole lot of that going on to get those bogus warrants. The third one, of course, is what he called a global leak referral, saying there are about a dozen highly classified sensitive information leaks that were given to only a few reporters over the last 2.5+ years. So we don't know if there's actually been any leak investigations that have been opened, but we do believe we've got pretty good information and a pretty good idea of who could be behind these leaks, said Nunez. Doesn't mean we know all the people behind the leaks, because when you read these, a lot of them are anonymous sources, and they always say something to the effect of current and former senior officials. Nunez, the story concludes, has railed for a long time against what he says is collusion between the far-left socialists masquerading as Democrats and the Russians. Yeah, who are the real communists here? Pointing to the use of the unverified Trump dossier by the FBI to obtain those bogus FISA warrants to spy on the Trump campaign. Hey, remember how much trouble Tricky Dick got into for a whole lot less spying on a whole lot fewer people? And citing the sensitive and classified nature of the 8 referrals he's already been talking about, Nunez refused to dive into too many specifics, but said that people that have followed Russiagate for a long time, they know a lot of the names, unquote. And yeah, speaking of obvious names, the Washington Watchdog Judicial Watch has released an additional 422 pages of way long, delayed, and almost but not quite successfully covered up FBI documents showing evidence of discussions of the big cover-up related to Hillary Clinton's treasonous email system and the company that managed it. For example, an email sent in December 2014 by Platte River Network said, quote, "It's all part of the Hillary cover-up operation. I'll have to tell you about it at the party," unquote. And the documents obtained by JW also show Intelligence Community Inspector General Charles McCulloch forwarding what were called concerns about classified information contained within those Clinton emails. But that's not all. Judicial Watch also obtained Clinton's 2009 Classified Information Non-Disclosure Agreement bearing her very own signature. And furthermore, documents show Platte River Network's use of BleachBit on the Clinton server to delete a lot of files. The program was downloaded on March 31, 2015, according to a computer event log, and over the next half hour, it was used to delete the files on a server at the time when they were, I hope you're sitting down, under subpoena. Which, if anybody else had done it, might be a genuine crime. This one, too, sounds like a genuine crime, except when you're talking those with a get-out-of-jail-free card. Emails and handwritten notes from June and July 2015 from the OIG show concerns over the material on the server. A redacted sender wrote to State Department official Margaret Peggy Grafeld that, quote, "Inadvertent release of State Department equities when this collection is released in its entirety, well, the potential damage to the foreign relations of the United States could be significant." ICIG McCulloch forwards the concern, saying, "Need you plugged in on this?" And the sender continued, "While working with this inspector, I have personally reviewed hundreds of documents in the HRC collection. I can now say, without reservation, that there are literally hundreds of classified emails in this collection. Maybe more," unquote. And again, if anybody else had done it, that's hundreds of felonies, folks, at minimum. Oh, and one more thing that I think does bear pointing out here. In this case, the name of the person who wrote the email is redacted, and there's probably good reason for that, because otherwise they might end up being redacted permanently and fatally. Well, that is, if they're still alive. And given the context, this one's almost humorous. In an August 2015 internal FBI memo, the Federal Bunglers of Investigation noted that Hillary had signed a June 28, 2011 official correspondence advising all State Department employees, well, at least all of those who actually care about security, that, quote, "due to recent targeting of personal email accounts by online adversaries, State Department employees should, quote, avoid conducting official department business from their personal email accounts," unquote. You know what they say, some animals are more equal than others. I guess what it all boils down to, folks, unless you are really fixing to run for president, all of this would fall into the category of, at minimum, gross negligence, or more likely, outright treason. So yeah, we're still waiting to see whether we still have a rule of law. Oh, and on that score, a quick glance at least, because it's probably all your host can stand, at a piece from Thomson Reuters Foundation News by Yagane Torbati and Jeff Mason about how it is that Trump is leaning real hard on the new Homeland Security chief, Kevin McAleenan, presently Commissioner of U.S. Customs and Border Patrol. He'll be the fourth person to try their hand at, well, not stopping the invasion. And the story says this, listen carefully, President Donald Trump's new acting chief of Homeland Security will be under pressure to implement legally dubious solutions to an influx of migrants at the southern U.S. border with Mexico, policies that his predecessor either could not or would not deliver. He takes over as over 100,000 migrants were apprehended. That doesn't count the ones that weren't at the southern border in March alone. And it says, as the president who made immigration, or the illegal version thereof, a key campaign theme, has grown increasingly frustrated with his officials, even as they, listen to this, have implemented aggressive policies to limit immigration. Say what? I'm certainly not buying that. Not if you've been paying attention to the news that's being passed down across the border, encouraging all these folks to come on in and get the goodies while you can. And when you see the court decisions that say, hey, we're going to tie the president's hands, and if you can just merely get across the border, you can stall forever and get the goodies in the meanwhile. Good grief. This is Cloward Piven at its finest, folks. Build a socialist system, incent all kinds of invaders to come on in, and use that to completely overload the structure and tear at the foundations so you can finish destroying what's left. In a nutshell, folks, what bugs me about the spin in this Reuters piece is they keep talking about court cases and so-called laws that tie the president's hands, all the while ignoring the Constitution and the fact that what we're really dealing with here is what is referred to multiple times in that generally ignored document as an invasion. And yeah, I really still am waiting to hear him call out the militia to do what's constitutionally required. On then to economics and jobs. Well, job jolts. Back in February, says a piece from Zero Hedge, the BLS, you know that should stand for Bureau of Lying Statistics, reported a dismal jobs report when the unrevised number saw only 20,000 payrolls added. And although the subsequent data claimed a marked improvement and an upward revision to the February number, which was a cold weather-related outlier, or so they claimed, what's called the JOLTS survey, job openings related, appears not to have caught up. And the result was the ugliest job opening survey in 3.5 years. Specifically, it says, in February, the BLS reported only just over 7 million job openings existed, the lowest number since March of 2018, and a drop of over 500,000, 538,000, if you believe the bogus numbers anyway, in just 1 month, the biggest plunge since August of 2015. Which brings me to this piece, which in large part I take with a grain of salt, although it does make for interesting discussion. This comes from The American Conservative by author Christopher Whalen, entitled Trump is Right to Blow Up the Fed. And he says this, getting started right off with a bang, the Federal Reserve is out of control. Well, so far so good. Acting in ways and with powers, he says, that were never explicitly granted by Congress. Unquote, and whoa, whoa, time out. Congress was never granted the constitutional power to create the stinking unconstitutional Fed in the first place. So, what the heck difference does that make? Anyway, it says last week, President Donald Trump set the economics community aflame. Maybe he means the MMT community, Modern Communist Monetary Theory, by suggesting that he will appoint businessman and presidential aspirant, and also former Fed guy himself, head of the Kansas City Fed branch even, Herman Cain, to the Federal Reserve Board. Even more than political economist Stephen Moore, say his critics, Cain represents a threat to the cabal that's controlled the central bank for decades. Why? Well, not because Cain has a history of being an insider with the Fed himself. It's because, says Whalen, he's a successful executive who founded a real business, took risks, and created jobs, things most academic economists will never, ever do. Whalen won't say it. I will. The other thing those academic so-called economists will never, ever do is to advocate honest money and abolishing the unconstitutional Fed. But here's what they're going to focus on instead. Media outlets, he says, and other allied constituencies have howled with rage at the prospect of President Trump packing the Fed. A twisted reference at FDR doing that very same thing to the United States Supreme Court in the 1930s. And what are they worried about? Well, the so-called independence of the Fed. And yeah, independent from what? Crooked men and dishonest weights and measures? Hardly. But Whalen's not concerned with any of that. No, he cares about the fact that the Fed recently, he says, has had a disturbing tendency to deviate from its legal mandate and make up new authorities to fit the changing economic situation, which is why they exist, isn't it? Case in point, the dubious notion we should seek a 2% rate of inflation, which is true but kind of misses the bigger point, which is that's the nature of crooked fiat currencies. He does seem concerned that neither Bernanke nor Yellen bothered to consult Congress when they decided to discard their legal responsibilities and do things like quantitative easing to infinity. Yellen, he said, confessed to be perplexed by the dearth of home purchases by young families, but she is in fact the cause of the malady. Well, she at least as head of an agency that shouldn't have existed. All right, so I'm going to skip over all the rest about the Fed's mandates, things like 1978's Humphrey Hawkins Law, given that they shouldn't have mandates or existence to begin with, and cut to the chase where the blind pig metaphor applies, and he may or may not actually find an acorn. The biggest problem facing the financial markets today, says Whalen, is that the folks at the Fed have no appreciation for how their policies are affecting the real economy. 10 years of inflation, open market manipulation, and other experiments have left the U.S. burdened with trillions of dollars in new public and private debt. The December market break was a direct result of the fact that Fed officials do not really understand the real-world consequences of their actions. Full stop, and I'm not buying that for a second. I think they do understand, but their real mandate, folks, isn't about full employment or minimal inflation, although it does certainly involve doing the bidding of their bankster masters. It's about destroying the entire monetary system so that the phoenix of an even more nasty controlled fiat can rise out of the ashes thereof. Yeah, more Cloward Piven strategy. With no shortage of the Hegelian dialectic thrown in as well. But the bottom line is at least, well, educational. We should, he says, be worried about Fed independence, but not because the central banksters are somehow suffering under the tyranny of the executive branch. Rather, it's because the Federal Reserve is out of control, acting in ways and with powers that were never granted to it. Things like quantitative easing, Operation Twist, and the explicit 2% inflation target are just three examples of how the Federal Reserve Board is operating outside of its legal authority. Well, folks, Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution says the Congress was acting way, way outside their constitutional authority by creating the Fed and allowing it, or the combination of them plus the Fed plus the IRS, to create a fiat currency, even though it took a few decades, that is completely unconstitutional from the get-go. Here's the final sentence from Christopher Whalen in the American Conservative. It's high time that President Trump put some new faces at the Fed and started asking questions about what policies it follows and why. No, it ought to be asking, why don't we do what Ron Paul has long advocated and abolish the Fed? And as misguided as that piece might ultimately be, it ain't nothing compared to what 60 Minutes is trying to pull. Zara Hedge talks about how the CBS so-called news program interviewed Bridgewater Associates founder Ray Dalio, who took his battle to encourage bipartisan, still though radical reform of so-called American capitalism to an even broader and arguably far more ignorant audience, that of CBS's long-running TV news magazine 60 Minutes, where he said, "The American dream is lost, and why American capitalism, sick, must be reformed." Quote, "If I was president of the United States, what I would do is recognize that this is a national emergency." Well, FDR got away with it. We've been suffering from that big, huge mistake ever since. And ironically, just about anything except the invasion from the South is now an emergency so far as the far left is concerned. And here's the money quote from this abomination, folks. Said Dalio, capitalism needs to be reformed. It doesn't need to be abandoned. It needs to be reformed in order to work better. American capitalism isn't sustainable. Unquote. And folks, call it what you will, but with dishonest weights and measures, we haven't had genuine free markets for the better part of 100 years now, and certainly, absolutely, positively not since at least August of 1971, when Tricky Dick Nixon closed the gold window, and arguably for decades before that, when Lyndon Baines Johnson got rid of the last vestiges of actual honest money in the form of silver coinage. We've been fully fiat ever since. And the results have demonstrated the wisdom of the founders in constitutionally preventing anything of that sort, for all that it mattered. And I guess since the term capitalism, even though we don't have it and haven't had it for who knows how long, actually came up there, we might as well trot this story out too, because, of course, in a free society, there's no such thing as a socialist minimum wage. And now we're seeing one more effect. The headline really covers it. Walmart is rolling out the robots, says another piece from Zero Hedge, after seeing the minimum wage raised. They're deploying robots to carry out more mundane tasks that can't be afforded with higher minimum wages, like mopping floors and tracking inventory, as they seek to cut down on labor costs. While the occasional cortex might not be able to figure out the connection here, to anybody with an understanding of even high school level economics, well, back when they used to teach it honestly, these are easy dots to connect. All right, let me follow that up with a couple of quick comments from a great piece by Lawrence M. Vance via LouRockwell.com entitled, Your Property is Not Your Own. He begins by pointing to Jack Phillips, the owner, well, I do have to say sick, right, because that's a misnomer, as he's going to make clear, of Masterpiece Cake Shop in Colorado, which was attacked repeatedly, even though they did get to the Supreme Court, by the so-called Colorado Civil Rights Commission. They thought, as owners, they still had First Amendment rights. He goes on to say Phyllis Young in Hawaii, who ran the Aloha Bed and Breakfast in Honolulu, wasn't so lucky either, because as a Catholic, she decided to turn away a lesbian couple from renting a room. She fell victim to lawfare, whereupon an anti-constitutional but pro-gay group said, The freedom of religion, yeah, sure, do we still have that, does not give businesses a right to violate non-discrimination laws. See, some gods are more equal than others. Phyllis Young, says Vance, evidently thought she lived in a free country and could do what she wanted on her own property. But religion has nothing to do with it, notes Vance. Because in a free society, the property rights of business owners, if they're actual owners anyway, should be no different than those of homeowners. Well, they ought to be better than what homeowners now have, too. Because, of course, if you pay rent to the almighty state, you're not really a homeowner now, either, are you? And if you can't add to or change what you thought was your home without permission, well, ask that guy who the real owner is. So yeah, if we still had ownership, whether we're talking business owners or anybody else that thinks they own something, they ought to have certain unalienable rights, like the right to hire and fire who they want or don't want in their business or home, to think what they want, to associate with whom they want, because in a free society there are no public accommodation laws. There are no civil rights commissions, and there are no anti-discrimination laws. In a free society, he concludes, property rights should be supreme. It's in an authoritarian society where your property is not your own. So let's close with this one out of not-so-free China, where the Guangzhou Department of Ethnic and Religious Affairs is offering $1,500, the equivalent of an average 2 months' income to Chinese folks, if neighbors will turn in what are called leaders of illegal house churches. And most of us can see this coming, right? Because Big Brother obviously doesn't like the threat of religion when it comes to infiltrating and undermining his power. Talk about a jealous god, albeit a fake one. That'll do it for today, folks, but it does make the point. It's time to make sure we know who we serve. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.